you. Really, thank you. Gosh, here we go. 12-3596, United States versus Farshad Kihazi.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Connor O'Daniel. I represent Farshad Kihazi at the district court level. This is an appeal from a final judgment in which the district court, he pled guilty to count two. Counts one and three were dismissed pursuant to the plea agreement. And the court, in our appeal, we believe committed error in determining the amount of relevant conduct, in particular the number of firearms that were accountable or attributable to the defendant. In this particular case, nine firearms were ultimately recovered as part of this. Initially charged as a conspiracy, he pled to a felon in possession. The conspiracy charge was dismissed. Under 2K2.1, the number of firearms becomes important because from 3 to 7 is a 2-level enhancement. From 8 to 25 or 8 to 24 is a 4-level enhancement. The court conducted a hearing upon which my client denied that he ever possessed nine firearms. It was a sale of one AK-47 that was part of a sting operation. At that point, they recovered a number of other firearms from the vehicle in which he was a passenger in. It was not indicated that all of those firearms were found in that vehicle, according to the testimony of Special Agent Chad Foreman. The court relied solely upon, that was the only testimony offered by the government in the sentencing hearing, and we believe that the fact that they could not indicate that there were more than seven firearms, the court erroneously found that there were more than that and erroneously increased the offense level or the specific offense characteristics to a 4-level enhancement instead of the 2, which we argued for. As a result of that discussion or argument between the Assistant U.S. Attorney and Mr. Kihazi and myself, the court concluded that Mr. Kihazi was not truthful and therefore declined to award him any acceptance of responsibility. The net effect of that was where he potentially could have received a 41 to 51 month sentence if he accepted the responsibility and the 2-level instead of 4-level enhancement. It led him to ultimately a level 26. Under the guidelines, that was a 70 to 87 month sentence, and the court sentenced him accordingly to the low end of that calculation of 70 months.
I thought the number of guns here principally turned on the testimony of Alicia Wiseman.
She did not testify.
The straw purchaser who testified, and she was a co-conspirator, and she testified in her own plea proceeding and sentencing proceeding about the number of guns which exceeded the eight threshold for the enhancement. And then that was corroborated by Foreman's testimony, the agent, as well as Gamblin, who was involved in the AK-47 deal, and also a video. Wasn't there a video at Bass Pro Shop?
At the Bass Pro Shops in Clarksville. The corroboration, though, is from Wiseman herself. They found the video or the straw purchase at the Bass Pro Shop, and then she cooperated and told them that she had purchased eight. And then they went back and found those. I mean, she lied on her application. She lied to the people there. And so why would we give her any additional credence?
Well, that's up to the judge. The judge heard her testify and said that he found it credible, and it was corroborated by all of these other items of evidence.
I understand the deference that needs to be given, but the corroboration was only from Ms. Wiseman herself when she told them that, oh, I got those for Freddie. Those guns were not found with Freddie. Those for Shot, he goes by Freddie, I'm sorry. They were not found with him. The only thing that was corroborating to that is that she said that she bought them for him. That's a base allegation. Now, the court indicated that they believed, why does she have a motive to lie? Well, she already has lied. That's what she was convicted for.
You know what
the
I...
I'm sorry. No.
What I wondered why was why Mr. Dassey never asked for the opportunity to review the transcripts of her plea colloquy and sentencing.
Frankly, I...
And, you know, and for the opportunity to cross-examine her. Because, you know, Judge Young had said at that May 29th hearing that he was, in view of Mr. Chiazzi's position on the number of guns, what he was going to do, he was going to question her about this subject at her own sentencing hearing. And wouldn't that have placed Mr. Chiazzi on notice that Judge Young regarded her as a key witness and that he would ask, you know, that he would then take her testimony into consideration when he was going to sentence Mr. Gossi?
Surely he would take her testimony into consideration. However, from the May 29th change of plea hearing, her sentencing, I believe, was later that day, if I'm not mistaken. And he was going to talk to her. But what he did is he took our change of plea under advisement until we set a sentencing date in September, and he was going to make a determination of whether he was going to accept the plea. Mm-hmm. The September 25th date came and went. I believe I was in trial on another matter, and it was reset to November 2nd. It was November 17th that November 2nd date was put on the calendar. At no time did the court indicate that they would on its own admit her testimony as Exhibit 1.
But you knew the hearing had taken place. I mean, you knew the court had questioned her about her, about the guns and everything, because you were on notice of that. So between that time and these November dates, why wasn't there a request for a transcript? I mean,
I think what I took from it, and you know, this goes to perhaps a waiver forfeiture argument. I believe that the forfeiture is a neglect on my part, and so the review should be for clear error, and that's the Salem case in which I believe cited. I failed to object to that at the hearing date.
Right.
I took it from the change of plea that if he did not find that they meshed, that he was going to then reject the plea agreement, reject the factual basis, and then we would start over. Mm-hmm. And essentially that's what we did, because on November 2nd, we did the whole change of plea again. And Mr. Giassi remained steadfast in his denial of engaging in the conspiracy, and also denied that he ever possessed more than 7 firearms. I think it was the judge who...
The reason for taking the plea under advisement was not just exclusive to the number of guns. It was because your client was equivocating on the count of conviction that he was pleading to in terms of the factual basis.
Oh, I don't believe so. I believe he clearly stated that he was a felon in possession of that firearm. That was what he was pleading to, was count 2, not to the conspiracy. The conspiracy and then the felon or possession of a firearm after being convicted of a domestic violence or determination, those were to be dismissed. So he was pleading guilty and never equivocated as to the possession of the firearm.
Well, the judge apparently thought that there wasn't enough from him to accept the plea at that time.
The issue was only as to whether or not how many firearms.
I don't even know if I'm willing to accept the plea based on what he's telling me. That isn't limited to the number of firearms.
Well, ultimately, that became the issue. I mean, it was the issue all along, and I think the court understood that Mr. Glickman, who was the assistant U.S. attorney, and I never did agree as to the number of firearms, and that was going to be the contested issue at a sentencing hearing. And ultimately, and I understand the standard of review is preponderance of the evidence, unless there are some rare and exceptional circumstances, which this court has not exercised, but in the Ninth and Third Circuits has been exercised. I also looked at the Corbin case, which was cited in the materials, and it talks about preponderance of the evidence is the standard, but the district court judge in that case actually used a clear and convincing standard. There's also the Johnson case, which was decided by this court in 2003, in which the defendant's own testimony allowed for, it still used a preponderance of the evidence standard, but his own testimony really made it clear and convincing as to the amount of narcotics in that case, in which the specific offense characteristic of the relevant conduct would have been. In this, Mr. Giassi only indicated that he had taken possession of some firearms. Special Agent Foreman had never indicated the number of firearms that supposedly were taken out of this alleged conspiracy, or the number in which Ms. Wiseman had done the straw purchase of. He was under the impression that it was less than seven, certainly not the eight plus the one that was sold. And so it was a vague question in which he gave an answer. Well, I gave those guns, more than one, to Mr. Gamblin, who took possession of them. Those were the firearms that were found in his car, in addition to the AK-47, which was sold. That number, Special Agent Foreman could not determine whether it was more than seven, and relied solely upon the words of a liar on her questionnaire, but also a convicted felon as well. Now, what I sort of have some issue with is, yes, perhaps in hindsight I should have asked for that transcript, but in 16 years of practice, I've never seen a judge on their own admit a piece of evidence that they're going to consider. I just haven't seen it. And so when that happened, I was kind of deer in the headlights, and I really didn't know how to react to that. It was right at the end, on I think it's page 73 of the transcript. Judge says, I'm going to go ahead and admit that. That sort of runs afoul of an adversarial system in which we're trying to argue what the relevant conduct is. I understand the court has to, I'm just going to run out of time. I understand the court has to engage in some sort of fact-finding, but it's also incumbent upon the assistant U.S. attorney to make their presentation, the defendant to make his presentation, and the court to be the arbiter of the final fact, not to be an advocate on one side or the other. Thank you very much. And I will waive my 2 minutes if I need to, Your Honor. I'd ask for 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Very well, thank you.
Mr. McCoskey.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel.
Good morning.
Will McCoskey, Assistant U.S. Attorney on behalf of the United States in this matter. As counsel indicated, I was not the Assistant U.S. Attorney who handled this matter below, but as we've argued in our brief, Your Honor, this court should affirm the judgment of the district court. The district court properly calculated the appropriate guidelines range in this matter to include specifically the attribution of at least eight firearms to relevant conduct related to Mr. Giassi. That proof or that evidence came before the court in the context of not just one but two change of plea hearings in which Special Agent Chad Foreman of the ATF testified, and testified passing on the statements made by Ms. Wiseman, the co-defendant, about purchasing these eight firearms at two different locations at the behest or on behalf of Mr. Giassi. It wasn't just the word of Ms. Wiseman that the special agent testified to. It was also the words of Mr. Gamblin, as Judge Sykes indicated. He also corroborated that he was possessing or took possession of firearms on behalf of Mr. Giassi. And then finally, and this wasn't really brought up at all, the words of Mr. Giassi himself, post-arrest, post-Miranda, admitted to this scheme in which Ms. Wiseman would purchase these firearms on his behalf. So in light of that testimony, that sworn testimony by Special Agent Foreman before the court twice, the court was certainly entitled to draw conclusions as to the credibility of Special Agent Foreman by indirection, of course, the testimony that he or statements that he testified to, and compare that to the relative credibility of the statements of Mr. Giassi himself. So in determining that the firearms at issue here in relevant conduct amount to at least 8 firearms, that 4-level enhancement or increase in the offense level was appropriate. And relatedly then, of course, the denial of the acceptance of responsibility likewise was appropriate because that adverse credibility finding, of course, is tied to that. Mr. Giassi made statements to the court the district court properly found to be inconsistent with granting that credit for acceptance of responsibility. As to the second major argument brought by Mr. Giassi to the court today, I would just reiterate what we've stated in the brief, that is that Mr. Giassi waived any argument with respect to some sort of a due process denial when he did not have access to the transcript, the sentencing transcript of Ms. Wiseman. But even if this is a forfeiture situation or where plain error applies, the statement made by or that the court referenced, and I'll just refer the court to it now, it's in page 66 of the second sentence, or of the sentencing transcript, rather. And the question, this is quoting the district court, how many guns did you end up buying? This is the question of Ms. Wiseman. There was a total of 8. Question, okay, when you bought these guns, when did you give them to Mr. Giassi? Then did you give them to Mr. Giassi? Answer, yes. Question, did he pay you for those? Answer, he bought 3 to 4 of them. The others he said he would promise to pay back, and he never did. So the point is, Your Honor, that the outside bounds of that statement really is no different in content than what Mr. Giassi was tipped off to in the May change of plea hearing when the judge indicated that Ms. Weitzman was telling a story that was 180 degrees off of what Mr. Giassi was saying. And that was the entire reason why the plea was not taken at that time and why sentencing was kicked down the road to November, it turns out. So even if there was some error in denying access to this transcript that Mr. Giassi didn't ask for, really the gravamen of the statement that the judge relied on, the district judge properly relied on, was no different than what the judge had indicated was going to be the problem for Mr. Giassi anyway. So for all of those reasons, I would ask that the court affirm the judgment. Thank you.
Thank you. Come on.
If I could ask.
Of course. Yeah, don't go around waving.
I try not to do that. I think there are a couple things that the Assistant U.S. Attorney indicated. That credibility, obviously, was an issue for the court. But when the court asked for that transcript, and that recitation occurred on page 66 of, I think, 74 in that sentencing, so it was very late in the application of the sentencing itself. As Your Honor indicated, should I have been tipped off to that? Perhaps so. Perhaps so. My thought was whether he's going to accept the plea or not, not whether or not he was going to then use that in a transcript form in the sentencing. At that point, I didn't really have an opportunity to rebut that because I didn't have the transcript. And so they do talk about the court gets to set its own procedures which there is.
The PSR finding about the number of guns relied on her testimony, didn't it?
There was aspects of that which we objected to. And I think at that point, you know, just because she says that she bought 8, the question is, when the court, in setting up its own procedures and what to consider and what not to, relies upon an exhibit which has not been given to counsel and an opportunity to rebut, then I'm at a loss because I don't know what's in that transcript.
Isn't it very common for judges at sentencing to rely on testimony of co-conspirators on drug quantity, on number of guns, on loss amounts in fraud cases, etc.?
I've not run into it with regards to guns. With regards to amount of drugs, clearly there is. Most of these are conspiracies in which somebody may be a low-level dealer or something, but the conspiracy is much bigger, and you're just not aware of how much there is, and so ultimately you end up the DEA agent who ultimately testifies and reads that prepared statement is usually brought into that way. As far as loss goes, as far as monetary loss, those are typically longer hearings, not one hour or an hour and a half sentencing hearing in which essentially the U.S. attorney and the defense attorney are making this argument. And so I've not seen it where it's been that close. And I do think that the net effect of this, though, is in the case of a close situation where there's relevant conduct and you have these, you know, whether it be seven or eight, ultimately, if we're going to get in this argument of whether or not you're accepting responsibility and whether there were nine or seven, it's much easier to just try the case. And because in the end, if he's convicted of everything that they said, then he gets 70 months anyway.
But the nine or seven doesn't relate to the acceptance of responsibility because he was claiming it was only one.
Well, actually, no, he didn't. The court found that he had three. The court found that he had three.
Right, but his statement to the court at the initial hearing was that it was only one, Judge.
That he
kept saying it was only one. You know, I disagree. It's only one.
At the initial hearing. But in the second change of plea, the court made a finding that there were three. One that was sold, there were two, I believe, that he'd taken possession of. The others, he never actually said that he took possession of. He said that he had cleaned some, but that he had never taken real possession of them. And so that may be a distinction without a difference in the legal terms, but from his standpoint, you know, he had them and he gave them back. They're not his. They're not his possession.
So
we're asking that the court remand this back for fact-finding in which I can depose, or not depose, but cross-examine her, which, unfortunately, the Ross case says I don't even have an opportunity to do that, and make a more cogent and spirited defense with the opportunity to rebut the evidence that the court relied upon.
Well, Mr. O'Daniel, thank you so much. Thanks to both parties. You were also appointed.
I was, Your Honor.
You took the case, and we thank you for your really spirited defense of your client.
I appreciate the opportunity.
We really appreciate when you lawyers do this. It takes a lot of time and effort out of your everyday lives, and we're grateful.
I appreciate it, Your Honor.
Thank
you very much.
Grateful to you, Drew. Public servant. So, here's the story now.